Hello, my name is Daniel Nenni, founder of SemiWiki, the open forum for semiconductor professionals. Welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is Rebecca Lewington, technology evangelist at Cerebras Systems. Before Cerebras, she held similar roles at Micron Technology, Hewlett-Packard Labs, and Applied Materials. Rebecca has a master's degree in mechanical and electrical engineering from the University of London and holds 15 patents. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dan. Nice to be here.
So first, can you tell us how you came to the semiconductor industry and then what brought you to Cerebras?
I think it's fair to say I came to the industry crab-wise, sideways, step by step. When my first job out of college was actually with the company who sponsored me through college, a little company called Edwards High Vacuum, who makes vacuum pumps. And I was working on turbomolecular vacuum pumps for one of the applications for which was semiconductor plasma etch. And so I was sent out for a six-month assignment to help get one of our pumps qualified on an applied materials etcher. And while I was there, I got several other projects and kind of got stuck. And here I am 27 years later. I ran an engineering team who did customer support, global customer support for metal etch. And then I ran an engineering team developing photomask etchers for photolithography. And then at some point in there, long story, I moved across to communications and started talking about applied materials technology rather than actually inventing it. And from there, I was invited to join HP to be the communicator for their CTO, Martin Fink. At the time, HP Labs was a very, very rich assortment of 600 PhDs, all working on very exciting new technologies. So that was great. And then from there, I went across, I followed a colleague across to Micron Technology, the memory maker. And then just about a year ago, I was invited to join Cerebras by an old colleague from HP Labs. So here I am.
So let's talk about the Cerebras Wafer Scale Engine, or the WSE, and how it relates to the product CS2. Can you tell us why this is the optimal solution for AI and deep learning?
I certainly can. The wafer scale engine is the enormous microchip that is the heart of our CS2 system. Normally one wouldn't name the chip inside the system separately, but because it's so unusual, it gets all the press, so it gets a special name. Now, our chip uses an entire 300 millimeter silicon wafer. It's a little unusual in that respect, a little. It also has holes drilled through it, by the way, which is also, as far as I know, unique in the chip world. And it has 2.6 trillion transistors. It has 850,000 cores optimized for sparse linear algebra. So it's basically an entire cluster of compute components all on one chip. And we'll talk about it later, but being the biggest chip ever made and the fastest AI processor on Earth has enormous ramifications for deep learning across the industry, and also to quite a big degree for HPC. We can do bigger models, we can train them faster, we can do new things that just can't be done any other way, like 50,000 token secret links, for example, and automatic sparsity harvesting. So it's all terribly exciting.
Yeah, I remember the announcement. It was the biggest chip at that time. So what are the challenges you're trying to solve with the wafer scale engine and CS2? Can you talk some, examples?
Sure. Well, everyone, I'm sure everyone in your audience knows that we're just at the beginning of what neural networks can do. And we're reaching a pace where the models are getting so big because they perform better that way, that we're reaching a pace where traditional computing is really having trouble keeping up for both training and inference. For example, just like 4 years ago, a state-of-the-art neural network had 100 million parameters, and we thought that was gargantuan. 2 years later, we have GPT-3 with 175 billion parameters, and now people are announcing and talking about trillion parameter models. There's no end in sight. And if we're going to be able to use these models, or more to the point, if more than a couple of companies are going to be able to use these models, train these models, I should say, then we're going to need a completely new kind of hardware architecture to actually do that. Our founders could see this was happening and realize that to keep up, we were going to need multiple orders of magnitude more compute power because these models are outpacing Moore's law by some enormous factor. I think they're doubling every 3 months or so. And they identify three places where that improvement's going to come from, and they multiply. So the first one is you need, you want ideally have an order of magnitude improvement in scaling up at the chip level. And this is us, because Moore's law simply isn't enough to pack an order of magnitude more devices on the same area. Then we need an orders of magnitude improvement in the core architecture, so we can go beyond just brute force flops. And then we need orders of magnitude improvements in scaling out to improve and simplify clustering, because that's quite painful today. And then we should mention that we also need order of magnitude improvements in power efficiency. The statistics around how much power it took to train GPT-3 a couple of years ago are well known, and they're a little terrifying. And given the fact that we live with a set of finite resources, we do need to get better on power efficiency. And all those things like improved computational efficiency and time to train are direct levers on the energy equation. Hence, Cerebrus, we were founded to actually solve that Moore's law issue. And we realized that pretty much all the algorithms underneath AI are just simple sparse linear algebra, fairly simple vector math, but with very low data reuse, which means you need massive memory and massive fabric latency and bandwidth. And conventional systems just aren't built that way. They don't have enough. They've made that trade-off between powerful cores and on-chip memory in a way that favors the core, not the memory. So they have to go off-chip a lot to get over DDI, whatever it is, to get to HBM or to other DRAM, or even goodness out to flash storage and things. And so from the perspective of the math, the memory hierarchy is a disaster. The moment you have to leave the chip, you're in trouble, even if it's to co-packaged HBM that's right there. So if Moore's law isn't going to do it, we've got just got one course of action: bigger chips. And that's the grand challenge, and we believe we can meet this unprecedented demand.
Oh yeah, that's interesting. So what can you tell me about the wafer scale cluster, something I read about?
Oh, sure. At the wafer scale, at the single wafer scale engine chip, so the single CS2 system level, we can fit absolutely enormous layers on the chip at once. In fact, we can fit a whole model up to a billion parameters on the chip at once. But we used to think that was bigger than we were going to need. But now we realize that's not going to be a very, very big network. Indeed, it's already not a very big network. And so what we've done is flip the execution mode around. So instead of holding the parameters on the chip, we hold the activations on the chip, and then we stream the weights on and off. And our wafer scale engine is big enough to hold the biggest single layer of any network, up to hundreds of trillions of parameters, which means that we can train strictly model parallel, and then just replicate the training across many systems, which is what a Cerebrus wafer scale cluster is. And because it's model parallel, we don't get any overheads, and we're actually achieving very, very nearly perfect linear scaling across many systems. And this is unheard of and very exciting, because if you've got to train a big model over thousands of small devices, it's brutally difficult. And surprisingly, it's not really the AI that's difficult, it's the distributed computing. So if you're distributing the computing over a small number, relatively small number, hundreds of our systems, model parallel, it's going to be a lot easier to do and a lot quicker than doing it across thousands of small graphics processors or some other chip non-wafer scale integration solution. I'm not sure that was the clearest answer to the question, but I hope you get the point.
Oh, I do. No, very well said. So how does the landscape look in this area? You know, what type of competition do you have? You know, how do you compare?
As you know, it's a wonderfully crowded field. We were at the AI Harbor Summit in Santa Clara a couple of weeks ago, and it was fascinating seeing all the people working on chips that were like one square millimeter, using spiking neural networks to do super low power edge inference, all the way up to people working at the conventional chip level, and then up to us working on the wafer scale. And when you look at it all together, we're the only people working on that really big end. Anyone else who's not using the whole wafer, who's using individual reticle size chips and maybe connecting them up with their own fast off-chip networks or using interposers or anything, they're actually doing something different. So we're the only ones capable of really scaling up to the up to wafer scale. So we're the only ones who can have hundreds of thousands of cores, tens of gigabytes of SRAM distributed evenly across all those cores, so that you've got nanosecond clock, single clock cycle access to memory on an individual core, and single nanosecond, single clock cycle access to adjacent cores. So it's really a very different thing compared to the competition.
Yeah, I can see that. I was at the AI Hardware Summit as well. In fact, I saw you folks there, and I was surprised. I was happy to see so many of this of the AI designs coming to the chip level and even to the customer level, the user level. And yeah, I was impressed at how many companies there were there and how many people attended this event. So I'm looking forward to more events like that. So let's talk about deep learning and machine learning. So deep learning and machine learning are being utilized in nearly every industry. Does Cerebus have customers? You know, what applications are they using the CS2 for? You know, can you provide some color on this?
Yes, we do. We've got customers across lots of industries doing important work. And importantly, we've got repeat customers and customers buying upgrades. So that's always very encouraging. They're not just buying one as a science project. It's a thing they really need. So in the pharma space, we've got people like GSK, Inference, AbbVie, AstraZeneca doing work, particularly in the omics field, but also doing more conventional NLP type applications like summarizing long documents or synthesizing patient records, or those kind of more traditional tasks that people use transformer models for. We've had a lot of success with the national labs, places like Argonne National Laboratory, Lawrence Livermore, the National Energy Technology Laboratory, and the National Center for Supercomputing Applications, who are offering or are doing a remarkable variety of work, both in the NLP space and also in traditional HPC, and in things that combine the two, where they may be offloading an AI part, machine learning part of a large simulation to our system, which is connected to a large supercomputer. We've also got some customers in the finance space who prefer we don't give their names, because the things that we're doing for them, they regard as a serious competitive edge. And we've also got customers in traditional HPC, such as TotalEnergies Research USA, who are using it for sensor codes to do seismic modeling. And also our friends at the National Energy Technology Laboratory are doing some very exciting work using stencil codes to do faster than real time computational fluid dynamics. So yeah, we've got quite a few customers doing some interesting things.
Yeah, I could have guessed about the labs. I've spent time at Lawrence Livermore and Lawrence Berkeley in the supercomputer center, and boy, they do some impressive simulations, and they're always looking for new compute power.
They do, and they work as a fantastic incubator for this space, because they have the expertise, and they have the funding, and they have the time, and also the networks to be able to see where new technologies fit, so that they provide a tremendous service. And actually, on a somewhat related note, places like the Pittsburgh Supercomputing Center and the Leibniz Supercomputing Center in Germany, they're very important, and EPCC in Scotland. They act as a sort of academic cloud where researchers who have ideas for new types of machine learning or want to do conventional machine learning at a scale that they just can't achieve otherwise can get time on our systems through them. So that's another important layer of the customer landscape for us.
Yeah, interesting. Excellent. Great discussion. Thank you for your time, Rebecca, and I look forward to speaking with you again.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Dan, and it's always, always good to be on your podcast.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.